To be honest, I don't actually remember the episode. It was so long ago, but I'm sure I've seen it, at least in syndication. The one where Arthur Fonzarelli jumps his motorcycle over the shark. Right, that phrase, jumping the shark, has outlived that episode of Happy Days, as these things usually do. Right, the kind of pop reference that takes on its own life, a strange life, if we think about it. Because when we say that something has jumped the shark, we say something very specific, right? Something that has nothing to do with jumping or sharks or Happy Days, right? We're saying we've stopped believing. We believed before this moment, and now we don't. We've stopped believing. But somehow, we don't take any responsibility for our own belief. We admit that we've stopped believing, of course, but because of something someone else did. So we usually blame them, the filmmaker, for instance, for our own new disbelief, right? We say they jumped the shark. They created something so preposterous we can no longer follow. In art, however, we say it the other way. We start with the willing suspension of disbelief. We suspend our disbelief and therefore give belief a chance to prove us wrong. But when disbelief comes back, well, it must be the bad special effects or the illogical outcomes or that person definitely would never have said that. We all know this feeling, of course. When something just stops being fun, or the magic disappears and we finally look around and see that the heroes are just people. The effects just don't look real enough. Yet none of us is willing to truly own the moment of disillusionment. They messed up the perfect show, we think. But it's our disbelief we were suspending. It's our belief we stop offering. Even that our default is disbelief should bother us. We, the people who claim to believe. Hearing Jesus talk about the bread of life for the last few weeks has been interesting, but now it's starting to just get weird. Remember that his closest followers, who he called disciples and apostles, who are learning and doing what he does, have been following him, and now large crowds are starting to form, surrounding, following, watching, hounding. And at first, people started coming to him because of his teaching, then later, not so much. And it became all about the miracles. Everyone seems to want to have a piece of Jesus. And now the crowd is starting to fill with skeptics. It isn't just true believers anymore, but those who don't really want to believe. And their questions aren't entirely fair or honest. We've seen this growing for the last few weeks. Jesus is trying to teach, and there's such confusion. It's like they're not even listening. He's talking about bread come from heaven, and they're hearing it so literally. How is this man also bread? Right? What is he even saying? But Jesus keeps pushing, strangely. I am bread. He's saying, I am bread, and those who love me will eat me. Our own skeptical postmodern brains, well, we get kind of chill about this metaphor. We kind of like it, right? But they shouldn't. Because Jesus isn't winking and nodding at us knowingly, right? Saying, there's no, I'm bread, wink, wink. Right? They're missing the point, and we're missing it from the other side. Jesus is quite literally telling them that he is bread. Full stop. And then he says again and again, they are going to eat him. They're going to chew on him. And it's even weirder than that, if you can believe it. It's weirder than the English makes us think it is, right? Because he starts with this Greek word for eat, which is just about as innocuous as the word eat is, right? But then he switches to another word. It's a word that's more gross, like feeding or gnawing or devouring messily. It seems as if the skeptical response from the doubters has Jesus doubling down on this weird metaphor of eating him, right? Not just making his image even more literal, but also gross and disturbing, somehow less intellectual and more real and honest. It's like he's saying, you're not understanding me. When I say eat, I mean it. Like, take big old chunks and tear it off and chew with your mouth open so that everyone can see that you really are eating my body. This is what you will do to me. And good, quiet Episcopalians read this passage and think, well, isn't that nice? Look at that great metaphor. My, Jesus can be so colorful. What a kidder, right? Or else we're saying, yuck. That is disgusting. But I think Jesus is calling us to listen to him, don't you? Don't you think he wants us to actually hear the words he says? But we don't really want to hear those words. We want to hear different words. We want them to be different. He says, very truly, I tell you, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in you. And we think, he's talking about communion. And Jesus starts talking again, even after that, talking again about flesh and smacking lips, like he's going to be telling us to go find some barbecue sauce and Texas toast. Figure out who has the smoker. Let's get this started. It's going to take about 12 hours. I just rewatched this week, rewatched the Halloween episode from the second season of Community. And if you've never watched the show, it was a wickedly funny and absurd comedy about a community college called Greendale. And a common theme within the show was that it liked playing with this sort of same line between belief and disbelief, literal and metaphor, true and absurd. It just plays with these ideas all the time. And in this episode, the students gather for a Halloween party, and soon after the party starts, one of the students, it's Chevy Chase, by the way, bites another student, and they seem to be turning into real-life zombies. So the main characters start treating their life within the show like it's a zombie movie. It's a show within a show within a show. It's actually really good. It's hilarious. But the creators of the show know how we are going to treat that suspension of disbelief. So even within the show, we need the seemingly rational reason for these realistic characters, sort of realistic characters, to be acting this strange way with this cannibalistic behavior. I mean, spoiler, it's some sort of mutant rabies. But it doesn't want you to stay in that rational mind between these things, right? Because these are mutant rabies from an absurd secret government project that somehow slips into this world. It's ridiculous. It's absurd. And we demand rational responses to things. But instead of getting a rational reason in the show, it gives us more absurd. And reading this text about eating flesh the same time that I'm watching this episode about people biting each other was quite awesome, right? Because the question the show raises is a lot like the one that Jesus is raising, actually. Because we're obsessed with what's real and tangible. So we ask ourselves, did the show jump the shark when we're watching it, right? So did the show jump the shark? How much am I willing to believe, or more, how much am I willing to accept so I can not disbelieve? And Jesus, like that episode of Community, seems to be asking us in return, what are you talking about? I'm talking about my being bread and your feasting on me like hungry bandits or flesh-eating zombies, if you like. You're the one trying to make it something else. So, is Jesus jumping the shark, right? Is that this moment where people start disbelieving? In the text, it is. He keeps reinforcing what seems like a metaphor by using even more literal language. He wants his hearers to stop translating him into something else. Like they're all putting words into his mouth. They'd rather avoid Jesus than listen to him. That's why this isn't just some new opportunity for the church to talk about communion. Right? Why? Because of how the skeptics respond to this weird moment. It says, the Jews then disputed among themselves. But according to Raymond Brown, it's more than that. The Greek, he argues, suggests a violent dispute. The skeptics aren't innocent people grossed out by Jesus' disturbing talk. They're threatening, maybe pushing or hitting people. At best, they're starting to pick some fights. And at worst, maybe preparing to riot. And given what's going to come, this supposedly simple metaphor of eating flesh seems to suggest that Jesus' followers are all participate in some corporate abomination, breaking sacred laws around blood and flesh and ritual purity. And so, yeah, Jesus sounds a little like Kevin Bacon in Footloose to us. But to a lot of people, he's the bad guy. Jesus is trying to teach students who don't want to learn. They don't want to hear him. They don't want to hear those words. And they're getting violent. And in a few chapters, they'll blame Jesus for it. They'll kill him and blame him for their killing him. They'll suggest that, well, he just jumped the shark. Really, we wanted to keep suspending that disbelief, but, you know, he brought it on himself. Jesus keeps teaching, even as they draw their swords and grab some stones from the ground. He keeps teaching. He keeps teaching them about God coming to free the enslaved and topple the despots in the flesh, in these imperfect carnal bodies, these baskets for the bread of life. He teaches, revealing the beautiful embrace of God, and they respond with the violent fists of humanity. I cannot tell you what this teaching really means. It would be a sick distortion, or worse, the full embodiment of what Jesus tells us not to do. Instead, we're invited to sit with this disturbing image, this thing that isn't a metaphor but can't be literal. It can't be literal, but we must treat it as if it were in the hearing. At this moment, let it be that. Let it be real just as it is, without interpretation. Perhaps like the truth we know is true. We just know is true. Like seeing Hamlet and learning courage is true. Like standing beneath a tree full of wind chimes, frozen in pure peace, is true. Climbing a mountain or a steeple and seeing the whole world is true. It's far more disturbing that we disbelieve the truth so easily and believe it so reluctantly. So Jesus doesn't jump the shark, we do. We take belief hostage, and all he's doing is showing us what real living looks like. Climbing mountains and running marathons, raising kids and teaching them everything we know. Loving, living, trusting, believing. So the question is never, is this real? It isn't how or what or when. Truth isn't definable. It's only livable. The question Jesus raises isn't, do we really eat his flesh and blood? The question is this: Jesus asked us to eat. Do we dare eat? Do we dare to feast and embrace who we are being called to be? To make this real in our lives, regardless of the metaphysics? Do we dare to trust ourselves to do what Jesus says? Do we dare believe? Believe so that we might let go of that disbelief we've suspended and feed it to the sharks.